Accession number 22087, Reel 2.
Corporal Weldon, Reel 2.
I think you were saying that you're not allowed to open fire without an order.
That's right, yeah.
How did that order get transmitted? Would it come down on the telephone?
It'd come down on the telephone, and there were failed telephones at that, you know. But they had a good system. There was a ring main, so if there was a blow up anywhere, instead of going that way, it could come back the other way, you know. It never was without being in communication with headquarters, like, you know. Aye.
So there was never, presumably your role on the Lewis gun or the Vickers was supposed to be against low level.
Yes, yeah.
What other air defence was there at Scampton at that time? Besides,
I don't know, perhaps the army was there with some stuff, but I didn't know about it, you know. Mm. There was. Now then, that just reminds me, there was parachute and cable airfield defence. Now, they were specialists. They had rockets and tins of piano wire. And they were at, say, the runway ends. And they, if there was a low-flying bomber coming in, strafing or like that, pressed a button, all these rockets went up, and there was trailing piano wire. And when they reached the top, parachutes opened, and they drifted down gently, you know. Because I remember that. I was up on the tower, on the water tower, and there was a aircraft flying round. I'd never seen it before, and it was going as fast as a Spitfire, and it had one engine shut off. And I thought, whoa, I'd have to get to know what this is. And it, that time of day, it happened to be an RAF de Havilland Mosquito, this, you know. And we had it in our aircraft recognition books. It was a DH number something. So I says to Sam, I says, I'm off to see where it is. Because at that time, we hadn't got the khaki uniform. It was the same as everybody else. Well, I goes running down the stairs from the top of the water tower down past the headquarters near the watch office to this aircraft, and I see DH, de Havilland, on the nameplate on the near the wheels, you know, and just said casually to one of the blokes, and says, what kite's this then? Oh, he says, it's a de Havilland Mosquito. Up the stairs, on the blower, it's a de Havilland Mosquito. Well, that upset the parachute and cable well, as they were supposed to be better at aircraft recognition than we were, you know. But that was another thing that happened, you know. Oh, it was a marvellous aircraft, that was. Couldn't half shift.
Did you do a lot of training in recognition? Did you spend a
lot
of
time? Oh, yeah, I spent a lot of time. And that was the reason for the cine camera on the tower. If anything was in range of the camera and you was up there, it had to be photographed for aircraft recognition purposes. It was, when they showed them on the screen, they were more like negatives, if you know what I mean. But of course, we were only amateurs. We didn't really know how to work the camera, not very well. One bloke, he photographed one of them sloping arms instead of doing the what he was supposed to do.
What were your living conditions like when you were at Scampton and
Scampton
and the
living
conditions?
Very good. Yeah. The satellite was rough.
Was it?
Mm. That was the wooden huts with the one stove in the middle, one of them round
turtle stove.
Yeah, pot-bellied stove. You know, and it was not allowed to be lit until 4 o'clock in the afternoon, you know. And it used to, oh, it was cold, it's starvation. And they would used to get red hot. And them that was right near it, they were roasted, and them at the other end of the hut, they were starved to death. And yet it was fit as little fiddles. And then when we went back into Scampton, we all got the bad colds. Mm. That was central heating there, you see. Very comfortable.
What about the food in the Air Force? What do you think of that?
Very good, as far as I was concerned, you know. If it was like you had one one choice. Everybody had the same. There was none of this, a bit of this and a bit of that, you know. And porridge in the morning. Used to get, and I don't know, I can't remember. Some maybe get eggs weren't all that plentiful. The air crew, they used to get eggs for breakfast and bacon and such as that, but can't really remember what we had, but we had enough. We was real hungry, and they used to, you could eat more than what they give you, because it was given you on your plate, you see. And we used to, there was that many thousands, you know, you used to double back and have go around again.
Could you do that?
For a little while. Then they found out that was happening, and they give you a book, and they used to have a cork dipped in ink, and it, and as there was a space, breakfast, dinner and tea. And when you'd had your breakfast, there was a wafer with this cork, used to mark that breakfast off, that was it, you'd had it. It couldn't go around again.
Did you have a naffy canteen or anything of that
yes,
sort?
Yes, oh yeah, we had a good naffy canteen. Mm. Yeah.
What could you do to keep yourself entertained when you weren't on duty? Because you were one day on, one day off. What could you do on your days off?
Oh, well, we used to go down the pub. And find, or into Lincoln, you know. Get down into Lincoln. And, of course, there was all the cinemas was all on the go then, you know. And if you was off duty, you go down in there and go and listen. And there was one of the big organists who played the cinema organ. He was in the Air Force. That's Captain. Hey, so-and-so's playing in the... Oh, right, we'll be off then. And you'd go down and go and listen to him, you know, and watch the film. And you could go into a cinema at 2 o'clock and you didn't come out till 10. It was continuous, you know. Mm-hmm. You got fed up and then you go in the Great Northern Vaults, they've gone, and have a drink or two and act daft and...
Were you ever aware of the fact there might be a threat of a raid on the airfield by parachute troops? Was that considered a possibility?
It was considered a probability, was that, and we had contingency plans. And I remember one night when they put these plans into operation, they had a great big Crossley armoured vehicle, you know, and you could have 5 or 6 men inside behind this armour plating, and it had chicken wire roof on. That was mainly grenades to stop them from coming in, you see, and then rolled off. And it was all night long, we were stood to right in the middle of the airfield, a moonlight night, waiting for these parachutists or whatever, and nothing happened. And 2 days later, I was in agony with my hip. And our bloke, who was a medical bloke, he was only an LAC. I said, oh, I said, hey, I've got a pain in my hip. He said, what have you been doing? Well, I said, all night long, I says, in that bloody armoured car. I said, I lent again the armour plating. Whoa, he says, it's rheumatics or something. He said, I'll cure it. Come here, he said. Get your trousers off. And he's got some horse liniment. What they rub on horses, and he rubbed it all on it, you know. It cured it.
Did you ever have any scares that there might be saboteurs trying to get in or parachutists in the area?
No, not. I mean, to my knowledge, there was no. I mean, nothing scared us, not really. Well, I mean, we were ignorant, that was why.
Had you done any training in basic infantry tactics?
On armed combat, no, that lark, yeah.
Well, and section attacks and platoon attacks, that kind of thing. Had you done any of that at that time?
No, not then, we hadn't. No. Mm. That came later on, yeah.
I was wondering how you were supposed to deal with a large-scale force arriving by parachute. I don't know if you...
We would have been caught on the up there. Yeah. If it had happened, you know.
What were your gun posts like? Were they dug in, or were they sandbagged, or how were they constructed? The gun posts around the perimeter.
They were like, you've seen a well, haven't you? Yeah. They were dug like a well, and a pole in the middle.
Mm.
And I rather like that system, because as you elevated, you went down.
I see, yes.
You know, to elevate the goods. Cause and later on, with the Brownings that we got later on, they came up and you were exposing yourself more. You didn't feel so happy with them. And with the Spanner cannon, they were terrible things, because you couldn't get... you had to have your wall for your gun post. You couldn't have it any higher than that, otherwise the gun was pivoted.
So you'd have to have it about 2.5 feet high, something like that?
Yeah, yes. They were terrible, them ones. Because we lost a lot of... At MacTiller, we lost some blokes there.
Because the wall was too low?
Yeah. Well, I think it was a terrible battle, that was, you know.
Yes.
And my mates, there was LAC, Brown, Corporal White, and a motor dropped in among where they were. And that was good night Vienna, you know, they were badly wounded and died. Now, Flight Sergeant, who was in charge of us, to see him every year.
The one at MacTiller?
Oh, he was Flight Sergeant CB. He lives on the Isle of Man. There's a gang of us that belong in the squadron. It was 2963 ACAC squadron in Burma. And we're still in touch with one another, you know, a lot of us. We've had Christmas cards from them, you know.
Now, eventually you were moved from Scampton and you were posted sort of in transit to West Kirby. How much warning did you get that you were going to be sent abroad?
Oh, about 3 weeks. They came round that they wanted so many men for overseas posting. And there was married men and all that, and we were all pals. And I don't know whether I was the instigator or not, but we said to the flight sergeant, leave the married men's names out of it and put all the single blokes' names in the hat and pick out the number that you want, and them blokes whose names is on them, they're the ones that's going abroad. Of course, man came out, didn't he?
What did you think about that when that happened?
Why, there was a bit of a emptiness in the stomach, you know, fear of will I get torpedoed, or, you know, all sorts of things used to run through your mind. And but there you are, I've said I'll do it and I'm going to do it, and that's it. So there we were.
Did you have any idea of where you were going to be going?
No idea at all. I should have had a clue, because not until we got on the boat, because they was leading us up the Gumtree when we was doing our training. They was dishing us out with and talking all about Africa, you know. And of course, the Desert War was in full swing. And we was thinking about, you know, the desert, you see. And everything pointed to the desert with the KD and all that. Like, they dished out with all tropical gear and topees and everything, you know. And taught different things about, you know, snake bites and one thing and another. And then off we went, and we went right up to Princess Dock, or landing stage in Liverpool. And the old Malogia was there, and we went on board of that.
Where did you do this extra training? Was that done at West Kirby, or was that done before you left Scampton?
West Kirby. That was kitting out and a little bit of instruction, you know, films on what life was like and all the rest of it, and how to behave on a troop ship and all that jazz. That was an experience on its own, was on the board the old troop ship.
I was going to ask you about that, about what conditions were like on the troop ship.
Well, it was like sardines in a tin, you know. There was packed on loads of them. I mean, there was decks. Well, first off, we was on a deck below the waterline and didn't go much on that. And they said, oh, is there any pack out gunners about among your RAF lot? Yes, yes, yes. Right then, we want somebody to man the, what was it? Orlikans, which was a similar, it was a 20mm and similar to the guns that we were used to. And we're used to deflection shooting and all the rest of it. Right then, that's a, we'll have, you'll have duties on the guns, you see, because they didn't carry gunners, they didn't, because they pick them up out the passengers, you know. And there was artillery and DEMS, that was Defence Equipment and Merchant Shipping. They had both of guns fastened down on the deck, and they had soldiers looking after them, because we at that time of day we had nothing to do with both of us, you know. And although the regiment did get him eventually, but not at that particular time. That was there. And he had all your... with you being machine gun crew, that meant you had to move up to be within a decent reach of the guns, you see. So that made life a bit better.
What sort of accommodation did you have? Were you...
It was in hammocks. Or there was 16 men to a table, and you used to be four men on the forms, and you'd get three men on the table, and then the rest would be in hammocks, you know. And it was all right. An old sailor showed me how to swing an hammock and put stretches in so you didn't get trapped in it, you know, and all the rest of it. They were lovely, and say it was enough. In a gale or out like that there, half the movement was ironed out with the hammock swinging, you know. But as soon as you put your foot on the deck, you knew about it, you know, within about 10 minutes you were seasick.
So you're more comfortable in the hammock if there was a gale blowing?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. As we was coming out of Cape Town, there was a southerly gale blowing, and the ship was leaning right over, and the noise from the wind in the rigging, it was terrible. And we was forward, and he come up out this hatchway, and he wanted a bit of midships to get into the saloon, you know. And I just come out, and the wind got me in a way, and if it hadn't been for the railings, I'd have been in the drink. Just blew me down, you know. And all you could see that way was the sea. And that way, the sky. The boat was on an angle like that. And these great big waves, as high as this house, you know. I weren't very happy. I thought, whoa, shall we sink, you know? Oh, it was terrible. Anyway, it calmed down later on.
You were saying that you sailed in a convoy from Gourock.
Mm.
What size of convoy was it? How many was it?
Oh, now then. It was a big one. There was all sorts in it. And we had a destroyer in among it, and corvettes, small corvettes, Liberty ships, in American Liberty ship, you know, and these big troopers, that was our, the Malodja was ours, but I don't know about any more. And that was a bit frightening, because off the coast of Ireland, you know, because you've got to come down from Gourock, down off the coast of Ireland and straight on down south, there was hell on at night. There was depth charging, you know. There'd been a submarine in the area, but water's so very solid, and they're dropping depth charges maybe miles away, but there was banging on the hull of your ship as though they were next door. You know, it was a bit twittery, you know, and all watertight doors, they just, you know, and you're there and that's it.
Did you have any alarms for enemy aircraft?
Not to going out there, no. I had some later on another trip, you know, but not on that.
Were these Oerlikon guns manned permanently while you were on the voyage? Were you sort of on a shift system of those? Or
yeah, they were manned day and night, you know. And then they also, there was other duties that you was called to do. That was with binoculars right forward, looking out for mines and things.
Lookout.
Lookout jobs, you know.
Well, if you were on a gun, how long would you have to be on it?
I think it would be about 3 hours, you know.
3 hours on and then...
And then off and somebody else had have a go, like... Mm.
What was the food like on that trip?
Not too bad, and then it got really terrible. Nearly had a mutiny. It was that bad. Mm. It was... They'd come from... She'd been to America, and in the canteen there was loads of good stuff, you know, peaches and stuff that we hadn't seen for ages, you know. But the stuff they were dishing up, we called it donkey's plonk. It was like salami sausage, and we didn't go much on it at all, you know.
What happened then? You said there was nearly mutiny. Was there...
there was an agitator on board. I didn't know nothing about communism or anything like that. And this bloke, I think he was from Liverpool, or a Scotchman. Maybe he was a Scotchman, I don't know. And he was staring it up. We weren't going to go. He says, you're on the guns, he said. Turn the guns on the bridge and tell him to turn round and go back home, you know. I says, you must be joking. He said, why? I said, what do you think that's going to do over there? It was a cruiser, Sheffield or something like that. I said, don't talk to daft. I mean, only 19 years old, you know. But he was half staring. If he could have done, he would stare it up. You meet all sorts, don't you?
Was there any improvement in the food?
No, not really. No. You had to put up with it, you know. No.
Now, I think you said you stopped at Cape Town on the way out and had a run ashore. What happened there?
Oh, that was very nice, was that. You got half boat there and there was queued up in their big cars and that. And are you four together? Yes. Will you be my guest? And Mrs. Williams of Sea Face took us all round and showed us all the sights there was to see in Cape Town. Smuts's house and down to the sea point and saw the Atlantic Ocean and the Indian Ocean where they met, you know, and then back to their nice house. He was a managing director of some description, a Welshman, I think. And we had a lovely meal, all the four of us. They had black maids, you know, with the little white pennies on, they were serving. And you know what we was going to have to eat, you know. And she said, oh, just take everything as it comes, because I don't know, there was loads of courses and we'd never been used to that sort of thing, like, you know. And it was beautiful and everything went very well, and we signed the visitor's book, and they had an old African grey parrot. I'll never forget this parrot, because there was a lot of spies down that end, you know, getting to know about convoys and tipping the subs off. And this old parrot used to say, don't talk about ships. Don't talk about ships.
I think your next point where you stopped, the voyage ended when you got to Bombay.
Yeah.
What was your first impression of India when you got there?
Oh, the Mystic East, you know. It was, nice and warm, you know, bit scruffy compared to Cape Town, and the white people there gave a bad impression straight away.
The white people at Bombay gave a bad impression?
Oh yeah, straight away.
Why was that?
They didn't want to know the common soldier, or the common airman even, because at Cape Town they'd been so keen to speak to us and want to know how poor old England was going on. Bombay, they couldn't care less. Good morning, and send their heads away. And that didn't go down at all well, you know. That was really, whoever they were, I don't know, these here people. And they were ladies, like, but I don't know whether they thought they were going to get raped or what, I don't know, but we were just ordinary acts, just off the boat. And was in transit, up They'd come and did a lot of houses up Worley. That was where they're going to make the transit camp. Eventually, they did, though, make a transit camp at Worley. They used to go on the electric train from Worley into Bombay. So,
did you do anything while you were at Worley, or were you just waiting to go?
We had guards. There was headquarters and patrols, guards, to make sure that there was no pilfering going on, you know. That was about all we did till we got organised and was waiting for kit coming up off the boat, all that, you know, your deep sea stuff. There was stuff, you had two kit bags when you was going abroad. You had one for wanted envoys, that was a smaller one, and a big one, the deep sea, it went in the hold. And you got your one there from the deep sea one, that you had to wait one that stevedore's got all that lot out, you know, and then you'd go and pick it up.
What happened to you when you got your kit then, and you got everything sorted out at Worley?
Oh, you'd have to find them ways and means. Oh, the food there was lousy.
Was it?
Yeah, it was contractors. And it was all, there used to be like a big bath boiling up this blinking mutton and stuff, you know. And onions and mutton and hardly officer any complaint. Yes, sir. Why can't we have a different going on? I said, it's stew every day. You know, sick of it. Oh, that's what you get. You're in India now, you know. And this year's contractor who was doing the cooking, he also run the canteen. You can get a meat and two veg and Yorkshire pudding and all that for a 1/6. You couldn't have it in the rations, you know. Big fiddle on there, I think.
How much were you being paid?
A shilling a day, wasn't it? About 10 bob a week.
So you couldn't really afford to spend 1/6 a day on...
No. No, we didn't do so bad, really, because you could get a lot to have a bill here somewhere. What a... You could have a slap-up meal for... 1/6, you know, in the old, I just maybe should get.
What could you do when you went down into Bombay? Was there anything laid on there for you?
No, there was nothing laid on. You went sightseeing, you know,
yeah.
And all round the gateway to India, and there was all these fortune tellers, and there was blokes that get your hair cut and. There was chiropodists, and it's amazing what's on the streets in Bombay. And then there was the records. You could go into HMV record shop and get HMV records. They was making them out there.
Did you have much to do with the native population? Did you have anything?
We had a lot to do with them when we was on the airfields out in the blue. And when we first went out there, we were living a life of Riley and at Cuttack. And then there was, say, what, 10 of us to in a bash. We've seen it ain't our fault, Mum, them bashes. Mm. We were in them. And we had the Chowwaller and the Bearer and the Nappy Waller. The Nappy Waller was the bloke who used to do shave. For 1/6 a week, you could wake up in the morning clean shave, and he'd shave you while you were asleep. And then you had the Bearer who used to polish all your brasses, and Dobie Waller used to do all the starch in your clothes, you know. He was highly KD, it was all pressed and starch. You used to have a job to get your feet in, you know, in your trousers.
Too stiff,
oh yeah, and all buttons all polished. Well, they used to be done by these Bearers. And the funny part of it was, you'd be dressed like that, all badges all shining, and you used to be inspected to make sure they were shining. And then you'd be sat in a gun post with all this glittering stuff, waiting for a Japanese aircraft. Bit silly, wasn't it, really?
Not exactly tactical.
Not really, not at all.
How long were you at Worley before you were moved on up to your first place in India?
We'd only be, what... at the outside, about a week, you know. Things moved at a very leisurely pace.